You know, the persistence over time for practically anything we do, whether you're learning a language or whatever, it's that we do better if we do a small amount persistently. In fact, there's plenty of studies that show that, you know, small amounts of time, a couple of times a day, is some of the very best that we can do, because the brain is then more ready and available to remember that information. They say that, you know, typically the first 15 minutes of our practice and the last 15 minutes of our practice is what we really remember, if you know, the full 15 minutes of it even. So, you know, a long span of something is not necessarily the best way for our mind to remember something, but short pieces of it will work. However, more importantly, doing something and trying to do it practically every day is what we learn the best, what we get the most information from.
So are you saying then that maybe doing, say, one exercise once a day and then maybe another exercise at another time of the day, every day, is better than all of it once a week?
Well, it can be. It really depends on the person and on their physical development. I would say to you that if a person were getting started with exercise, that one exercise one time a day, and then later in the day another exercise, and then doing that day after day for a period of time, could really make an advancement in the person's skills and abilities. And it's not to say that there isn't some benefit for, say, doing exercise of intensity once a week. I would say that if we're only exercising once a week, that's not enough. We need to have some amount of exercise practically every day.
Yes.
And the amount of exercise every day could go higher as we condition to it. So there's no one answer. Mostly it's what are you willing to do that you will do repeatedly without too much, without too little. So, and there's no one answer. There's no one answer. Things are said, so sort of like saying, what's the best diet? Well, there's no one answer. There's no one thing that works better than anything else. It's what is the most appealing, what works best with your personal habits and your needs, and then going from there. So, you know, that's what I say. And then that's one of the reasons I like these sort of compilation things that we do in this regards to the deep breathing. We did we didn't just do one type of deep breathing. We have you know, quite a few different ones, some of them very traditional and some of them just more from the categories of here's a breathing technique that somebody came up with, because one of those might appeal to us more than any other. And we do know that training the structure of our lungs is both a muscular training, a mental training, and as well as there's some physiological tissue that's not muscle that also needs to be conditioned. I want to welcome everyone today. It's so glad to have you here. This is the seventh of our series of classes, not the end of them. We may be changing format very slightly to add on some different things. And I sent you an email asking some opinions from you, and I value anyone's input. So if there's something that you are strongly interested in, go ahead and let me know what that is. And if there's something that you are interested in that I didn't mention, you can always put forth that concept, that topic, that idea. And so I welcome that type of interaction, because believe me, we get more of what we want when we feed back some information. So I try and target things so that you will get the most useful information that appeals to you, and that's how I work, is getting some feedback from you as well. But today we are focused on another, and I you know, this is one of those very fun kind of a traditional breathing techniques called the Sitali breath. It's traditionally done with the idea that it would cool down the body. And last time we talked about both contraindications as well as effects, both those that are more testimonial, I found that this did it for me, and versus data-driven effects where we've done a study, you know, a double-blind study, et cetera. And we found that the Sitali breath, although traditionally is used to cool the body down when the body's hot for various reasons, because we've exercised, or maybe we're having a hot flash, or maybe it's just summer, and it is creating a breath that uses the very blood dense tongue. There was no scientific data that supported it, and I think it's mostly because it's not an illogical thing to say that if you cool down the tongue, you will cool down the body. Probably so. But nobody has put forth a, hey, I'm going to run a study and do a study on that yet. So we don't have any data. But as far as contraindications to this one, very little. I'll talk about it more specifically when we get into it. But it's one of the, as I call it, the more joyful and downright silly kind of pranayama breathing techniques. But that's not all that that we've got going on with us today. So if you have your handout, great. If you've printed it out, if you don't have it printed out, that's fine. You don't even have to refer to it today. It's just there for you. The handouts that I create for you are to help you go back to that information. You know, you say, oh yeah, I remember that breathing technique that we did, you know, whenever. You can remind yourself of a breathing technique. The audios are still on my website too, so that you can go back and look at those and be directed through them in case you forget something. Feedback, she wants me to mute. Okay, so let me go ahead and do that. Let me hit the mute feature so everybody's muted. If you need to ask me something, you certainly can, but there we go. Thanks for letting me know that. And so, as I said, hopefully that information is useful to you. I will probably be changing some formats on how to get you the information. And these are just simple changes, allowing things to be more downloadable and stuff like that, so that you know, emails will still happen, but some of the information will be found more easily on my website as well. But we're just going to keep going on, probably with a compilation, a mixture of things, as people are indicating to me what their greatest interests are. We're going to practice some breathing techniques. We've got plenty of time for it today. I want us to start with the simplest of the techniques, the breathing technique that starts off as a diaphragm breath. And remember, your posture does matter. We don't want to do our breathing technique from a slump posture, especially not one where the rib cage is compressing into the internal organ space, because that's going to conflict with the diaphragm muscles' use and expansion into that belly space itself. You can sit, you can recline back, you can be on your side, you can be on your stomach. There's plenty of postural positions that you can go into that will work very well with breathing techniques. And so as we get started and we wake ourselves up to the concept of our breathing, let's go ahead and we'll be doing the deep belly breath. And we'll be making note of how we feel and how our breathing is right now. So I want you to exhale completely. And as you begin to draw your breath in, focus that breathing into your belly, trying to expand it outward. And it's a good idea to have sort of a count the number of seconds it's taking for you to draw that breath in. And then also count the number of seconds it's taking for you to exhale. And remember, whatever that number is, it's okay. It's an accurate number. It's just a reflection. It's just information for us to know about ourselves. And so you'll take another breath or two. And think of it this way. When you're doing a breathing technique, you want to do multiple attempts at that breathing technique so that you get a chance to truly try it out. There's about a 2-minute period of time that seems to give us a chance to really work with something. And depending on your rate of breathing, 2 minutes could be 4 to 6 to 8 breaths. But let's try for about 4 of these deep belly breaths. If you're breathing more quickly, add a few more onto that. And that is the simplest, the belly expanding breath, to pull the air literally in, to use the muscle known as the diaphragm. But there's more respiratory muscles that we want to condition. And by conditioning it the same way as lifting a weight to condition my bicep muscle, I would do exercise to make it stronger. And so we exercise by breathing, because remember, left to our own resources, we breathe very shallowly. We lift and lower the ribcage up and down like so, like a little bucket handle kind of action, that we are using the muscles nearest our neck to pull up and force down, but taking only sips of air in when we could expand our lungs, full 6 liters of air fitting into the lung structure. So for the moment, let's now switch over to different parts of the muscle features that help us breathe. So we've done the belly breaths, and what we're going to do is we're going to tighten our belly, and the next target is to breathe in the side of the chest, so from the rib cage up toward the underarms. So after exhaling, tighten the belly a little bit and see if you can breathe into the sides of your chest. You'll feel like you're expanding out here, and then exhale. And you want to count that number of seconds as well. So it's like we're just sort of getting wider. And it's not wrong to do something like I just did there, to move the arms outward to sort of get that concept in your brain. You're filling up the ribs, the side. I'll do a couple more of those, just that ribs at the side. Seeing what it feels like, what resistance there is. Great. Now we're going to switch, and there's this posterior portion of respiratory muscles. One section of it is in the lower back rib cage, right above the low back region. The other section of it is near the shoulder blade space. So we're going to combine them a little bit together, still pulling in the belly tight. As we exhale, we'll sort of tighten that belly, and we're going to inhale into the back of the chest, lowest area, and you can even spread the shoulders forward to get the shoulder blade space. And then exhaling, and that's going to fill the back of the lung field, which is quite a big expanse. I'll try it again. And as I said, it's okay to make it a little dramatic, to round your body, to try and get your mind to connect to where you want it to go. Let's try and create a couple more breaths, belly tight. You can even hold your arms. And we'll do it again. Good. And the final space we're going to concentrate on is actually the one we use all the time. It's up here in this collarbone space. It uses respiratory muscles, the scalene muscles, as well as others. And so we're going to now hold everything else tight and just try and breathe in right there in the collarbone. It may not be as deep of a breath as we've brought in other places, and that's okay. About 4 in each area. People have reported to me that when breathing in this way, they feel the tension in their neck. That's possible. Sometimes we inadvertently grip instead of let go. It's all right. But now we're going to put it all together in that 4-part breath. Each area, maybe not an equal amount of time, we're just going to try and fill up belly, fill up sides, fill up lower and upper back, and then take more sips of air in here, all in the same breath. All right, so exhale completely. Start it in the belly. And as the belly seems to be getting full, try and fill into the sides and the lower and upper back and collarbone space. And just fill, 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 fill. And if you didn't count, then the next time you will, you just exhale slowly, slowly, slowly. And you'll do it again. You're going to try and fill up all 4 spaces. So building into the belly space, sides, into the lower back and upper back, and collarbones, just trying to fill up. You'll feel everything tighten up. You'll feel like you just really can't breathe in more. Exhale. Never feel a grip in the throat. Never feel stressed. Exhale when you want to. Stop inhaling when you want to. And we'll do it another. It can feel a little odd, it can feel like things are stretching, it can feel like, you know, we're confined, But the lung structure is physically stretching. The muscles are getting used to it. Sometimes joint structures are getting used to it. And we'll do one more, finish one more of those breaths. And that is the basic breathing techniques, the ones that we should be perhaps every day doing a little bit of, at least a couple of breaths in a row, just trying to remind ourselves, oh yeah, let's breathe deep. Because as I said, unconsciously, we will breathe, whether we're conscious of breathing or not, but unconsciously, we will just shallowly breathe, just sufficiently, which is insufficient for fully activating the lung space. Some of what we have resistance is the pliability of the actual tissue of the lung. And when we fill it up, and those little, it's little grape-like clusters, they're filling up and they're expanding out, and that's the area, and then they're contracting down. And the lung, when it's uninflated, it's like my hands like this, more toward the breastbone. And when it fills the space, it's moving upward and downward and outward, and it's truly filling the space. And that's quite a bit of expansion of these teeny, teeny, tiny little alveolar structures that are filling up. And remember, a lung is an area that contains a lot of space. If we were to lay all the surface area of the lung outward, flat, that could come in contact with the air we're breathing in, it would be the size of a tennis court. That's both lungs, each one of us. Tennis court, right in here. So it's a lot of space, and we've got to work to expand it and to condition it and make it healthy and capable. And we've got to get our muscles capable of doing that. So it's very common to feel if there's some kind of restriction to getting that breath at first. But you're getting better at it because you're practicing, and that's what it takes, is persistent practice. So we're not challenging ourselves. And today we're going to learn how the body reacts nervous system wise to some of these challenges of breathing, what's happening within us based on what our brain, our nervous system is doing with us. Of the basic breathing practices today, I have found a couple of them, and there's lots of them out there. These are not typically those that are found. Sometimes they're a pranayama. But these two are not. These are just breathing techniques that people have used. And so yes, yoga has a tradition of breathing, but then so do other things. There's a lot of reasons that people focus on breathing. Sometimes it's for voice expression, where it's public speaking, or for singing. And sometimes it's just for dealing with issues like asthma or other breath issues as well. One of them, this is page number 2, is what's called equal breath. And so I was having you focus on counting, becoming aware of the seconds of your inhale and aware of the seconds of your exhale. And so this is a very simple technique where we become aware of our breathing, and we try and match up the duration of the inhale to the duration of the exhale. Now, you might have already been doing that, and that's perfectly fine. This may not be a big challenge for you. But, and you know, it could be that you say, well, one of them's shorter than the other. Which one do I go for? Well, challenge yourself to try and breathe into the one that's a little bit longer. Okay, so you're going to want to try and challenge yourself to take a nice, deep, long-lasting breath if you can. Okay? And so whichever one it is, but right now just get comfortable, right, in whatever position you want. If you want to keep changing positions, please do. But exhale completely, and on your next breath, counting the number of seconds it takes for you to inhale, and then as you're exhaling, just normally, breathe out and count the number of seconds and decide which one's longer, and then that's the number that you're shooting for, okay? So whatever it was, if it's 6 seconds, 10 seconds, 30 seconds, whatever it was, I want you to spend a couple of breaths. I'm going to time us for a couple of minutes now. So begin that breathing and, you know, fill up the space. Make it long and deep. Focus on one area. Choose the way that you breathe. Make the exhale and inhale absolutely equal. Keep your mind focused on that equality. Inhale and the exhale, same duration, exactly the same. My suggestion is that it be slow inhale, slow exhale, so that you're getting a really long duration, so that we're also maximizing the expansion of the lung space. But if you're preferring a shallower breath, the technique is just to breathe equally. And this is a good one when we're out and about and we're just wanting to relax ourselves, reduce our stress, bring ourselves into the moment. We're just now completing the first 60 seconds. So we're going to go another minute of breathing technique. So taking in those equal inhales, those equal exhales, and just keeping focus. That's one of the key benefits of breathing techniques, is that it takes us into the moment with ourselves. So instead of the mind surging ahead, anticipating future events, or hanging backward, remembering past events, and confusing our unconscious nervous system, we're right here, right now, and behaving accurately in the moment that we're in. We've got 30 more seconds just to continue that equal breathing in and equal breathing out. It's a nice way to pass the time when we are waiting for something to happen. Just give yourself a chance to be in that moment. About 15 more seconds, probably time for another breath or two. And when you've completed that, just relax, just stretch yourself, just move a little bit and go back to normal breathing. What was that like? If anybody wants to share information, I'll unmute us just for a moment. How are you feeling right now? If you want to comment, you don't have to, but sometimes it can help if you're feeling questions or anything like that.
No questions, but it was much more difficult than just regular breathing.
Ah, okay, right.
Yeah, it was, because you're trying to regulate both inhale and exhale. And it's not natural.
It is not natural. Yes, because remember, natural means we're completely unconscious of our breathing.
Right.
And so we're doing this and we're basically instituting a conscious control over an unconscious function. It's pretty amazing that we can create conscious control over our breathing, something that's so vital to our life. But indeed, that's a very common thing, that it's strange, it's unusual, and indeed that's one of the things that we're trying to emphasize.
Well, and the longer it went on, the harder it got.
Okay, all right.
Let me just go back to
me. That's right. Let me go back to my regular way.
Yeah.
Very good. Yeah, that's that too. But that's the challenge, and that's what's going to build us, make us stronger. All right, very good. Let's go ahead. I'm gonna mute everyone again. And remember, you can always use chat too. Let's see, yes, okay. And you can unmute yourself at any point, because that's what the thing just asked me. You can let people unmute themselves. Yeah, sure. This next one is actually a physical action. I ran across this one, I was like, oh, okay, that's rather interesting. And it uses the natural body contour to create the action. So this one would be done, I'm going to show it as a standing practice. I don't think it's absolutely incapable for us to do this next one in a seated position. If you were sitting in a chair, you could probably do it, but this is called a zipper breath. Okay, so let me describe it to you before we get it going. What we're going to be doing, and it was touted as a great way to do it in the morning, and I'm like, oh, okay. Or any other time you might have been sitting, or you let yourself, your body get still and stiff. But there is a contraindication. If you've got some lower back or problems with this, be very cautious, because it does ask us to go into a bit of a back-rounded forward bend. And if you were having some really bad back issues, you would not want to be working with a zipper breath. Now, if you just have a regular back, it's probably going to be just fine if you just are comfortable with what you're doing, okay? And so that's one thing that we're going to focus on. So I'm going to show it to you, and then we'll do it together, okay? So I'm going to be standing up, and so as I'm standing, what I'll do is I'll have my knees slightly bent, and that's just to prepare my body so that I'm not going to be causing issues. And of course, it's got my little sweet Trudy all excited too. I'll be standing, and then what we're going to do is we're going to bend forward. Now, it's not just bending from the hips, it's a rounding of the back. All right, so I'm starting like so, exhaling, and then I'm going to bring my body up and inhale, and then exhale, coming back down. Arms just hanging. All right, so you can just see, it's just very simple. But my knees are unlocked, and I'm only rounding down in a way that's very comfortable for my back. So if you'd like to try it with me, we'll do it a few times. Stand with the knees slightly bent, about hip distance wide. And we're just going to let ourselves go forward from the waist and the hips, so the back is slightly rounded. The arms can hang down where there's nothing uncomfortable should be. We're just going to exhale completely. And as we come up, we're going to inhale. And then when we're ready, we exhale, coming back down. We'll do it a few times. Next time we come upright, then we'll just return into a comfortable position. All right. Okay. So that was a little different. I'll hit us into unmute in case you want to comment. How'd that feel? How were you doing? Were there any problems? Did anybody feel dizzy with that? That was one of my concerns. Was it doesn't seem to be such an extreme or a duration that it would, but I could see is how if somebody was also a little bit woozy or dizzy, it might be an issue.
I really enjoyed the feeling of opening up as you're bending over, really opening up the back. So when you are coming back up again, I just let the dangling of the upper body continue until I came to upright. Because I have a lot of stress right now in that area.
Okay.
And so that was nice.
Good. All right.
It was much more natural because as you straightened up, you could take in more breath. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yes, it used the mechanical action of moving the rib cage. So as we were coming up, it was actually pulling the rib cage in such a way that it created a negative pressure system and brought more air in.
Oh, okay.
Let's see. I see that from a previous one, someone was saying, Ruthie saying, I can exhale more smoothly than I can inhale. That's very common. We have a difference in our capacities. We never even knew it. You know, it's like, well, that's a news to me. Let's see, Marie was saying, I like this one, the physical component. It could be a really great stretch. You know, it could really help us with that as well. I'm going to head everybody on mute again. Take out the background noises. There we go. And yet it could also be something that could be a strong contraindication. Yes, if you have back issues that would appreciate a bit of a stretch, that could be lovely. But if you've got back issues that are going to be irritated by that position, oh my goodness, don't use that technique. You know, first thing in the morning, is it absolutely necessary to do it? That's what it was touted as. I was like, well, I don't know. There were, you know, maybe not. It depends on how you wake up in the morning. If you tend to be a little unsteady in the morning, make sure you're someplace you're not going to tip over. If you have any kind of vertigo, oh my goodness, you wouldn't want to bend your head down. So, but those are pretty obvious contraindications with that, and yet it was a mechanical action that brought us upright and created a negative pressure, and first was, you know, it was using sort of that back of the chest rounding, and that was helping to express the air into the body as well as doing a physical stretch. So it served a couple of purposes, I think, and so a very reasonable action, and no reason for us to not think of the breathing, that creating movement could be very helpful and handy in bringing air in at different times. And so the idea is that we should have just a whole handful of these breathing techniques that we could switch from one to another whenever we wanted to, so that there is a great chance for us to use what seems to be the thing that right now would work the best for us. So that's what I'm hoping, is that that you find a few of these that you like, and therefore it's more likely that that you'll use them. Now today, for the anatomy portion of what we're going to talk about, I wanted to talk about the nervous system control, because there's actually a lot that goes into this. You know, we don't most of the time have to think about our breathing. We do breathe because it's one of the autonomic functions of our body. That part of the nervous system controls this, as well as, you know, the heart beating and things like that. But we can override this autonomic function, and we can breathe consciously. And I say that is just amazing, because the breath is the one of the most vital things. I mean, we run out of air, and very quickly things go negative for us. If we were to hold our breath too long, though, if we were to do something trying to exert conscious control and we did it for too long, our unconscious mind is going to take over. We're going to lose that conscious control, and we are going to breathe again. You know, if we go unconscious, we're going to breathe again. And it's that, you know, consciousness with a few little, you know, asterisks right there saying if, you know, you're conscious if. Now, the portion of the brain that controls the breathing is the most ancient part of the brain. It's just basically the brain stem. And so that's the first part of the brain. When we think about evolutionary structures of the brain was built on top of brain. So when we get to this lovely portion up here, the cerebral cortex, we're dealing with a part of the brain that has been added on. And so the nature didn't throw away anything it found to be useful. It just sort of glommed one thing onto another. And so the very basic part of the brain makes sense that part of the brain is in control of our breathing, because breathing is a fundamental to life. So it's sending signals to our respiratory muscles to contract and relax these respiratory muscles at regular intervals, usually just, you know, the ones that are closest to it, quite frankly. And it's why if we get damage to that particular brainstem part of the brain, while that can end our life, because if we damage the part of the brain that would be sending the signal to the respiratory muscles, then they no longer know to breathe, and that's why it can kill someone. You know, that neck fracture too high up, or the damage to the brainstem can end our life. Now there are several factors that cause the brain's respiratory center to activate, and that's one of them is just the amount of oxygen that's in our body. So the nerve cells, and they're found in our aorta and our carotid arteries, and they're always constantly checking just how much oxygen is in our blood, and we call these peripheral chemoreceptors. So they're checking the chemistry of our body and of our blood. And if the oxygen level decreases, these nerve cells will signal to the brain, and will say to the brain, we need to increase the frequency and the depth of the breath. So if the oxygen level falls, we start breathing more and more quickly and more deeply to try and bring the oxygen level of our system back up again. It's one of the reasons that we do something physical and we use up that oxygen. And then all of a sudden we're breathing. And we're breathing not just while we're doing that, we're breathing afterwards too, because the oxygen level of the blood didn't just immediately jump back up again. So you do something, you run, or you do something that makes you feel even lactic acid in the body, and your breath doesn't slow down for a little while, because your body is being told, breathe, 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 because your oxygen level has fallen. And the system knows, oh, let's bring that oxygen level back up again. Okay, so that's one of the controls. You will breathe because you need more oxygen. But another control is that the body is always checking, too, these peripheral chemoreceptors, the carbon dioxide. Now, so when we breathe in, we're breathing in oxygen. But when we breathe out, part of what we're breathing out is carbon dioxide. What happens when the body creates energy out of oxygen and the glucose that we get from the food? we create this byproduct called carbon dioxide that we are exhaling out of our body. It's a waste product that's exhaling out of our body. And so these chemoreceptors specialize to it. They check it in the cerebrospinal fluid because that area is very sensitive to the amount of carbon dioxide. And if it gets too high, so that carbon dioxide level gets too high, then the brain gets told, oh, we need to breathe more and more deeply and more quickly until those carbon dioxide levels come back down again, and then our breathing rate will slow down. And so that's part of it too. We might be in a situation where we have used up our oxygen and we can't exhale enough and we got a lot of carbon dioxide in our system. Or maybe we're in an area that there's a higher level of carbon dioxide naturally, and so we breathe more, we're trying to get rid of. And so these are things that are happening within our system that are checked constantly to maintain this very important level. Now, one of the reasons for the check of the carbon dioxide is not just because it's a waste product, but because of its effect on the acidity of our system. Now, we've got some of these chemoreceptors that are constantly monitoring the pH level of our blood and of our cerebrospinal fluid. And the thing about that is that we can allow only a very slight fluctuation of acidity, because that's very negative. Too much acidity will damage our protein and our structure and denature it and cause it to change irreparably. So we maintain our blood pH between 7.35 and 7.45. I mean, that's a tiny little range. And if we detect a slight increase in acidity, so we'd have more hydrogen ions, in part because of the amount of carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide creates more hydrogen ions, and that increases the acidity of our blood. And then the brain's going to get told, we need to breathe more. And so that's going to lower the acidity. Now, there's a lot of people that worry about the acidity of their system. And one of the things, the acidity of our system, whether we're more alkaline or whether we're more acid, is one of the easiest things for us to change simply by breathing more deeply. It changes quickly if we breathe more deeply. So a lot of people like to, I'm going to drink that alkaline water, or I'm going to eat an alkaline diet, and that's fine. But if you want to quickly change the acidity of your system and become more alkaline, then you need to institute deep breathing. Because that's going to oxygenate you. That's going to get rid of the carbon dioxide, and thus those hydrogen ions are going to go away, and your body's going to become more appropriately alkaline. Mind you, still within the ranges of 7.35 and 7.45, you're not going to change that, okay? So you're not just going to become this base person, right? But you are going to trend away from acidity and more towards alkalinity just by deep breathing. It's one of the positive benefits of deep breathing. Now, another thing that controls our breathing is stretch. We've got these stretch receptors inside of us. So it's constantly monitoring the expansion of the lungs and of the chest area. And if we overinflate our lungs and our chest moves too much, then these receptors are going to tell our brain that we need to exhale and we need to reduce the inhale. So it's one of those things. It's why I tell us that we need to practice in ways that are gentle, because it's just like anywhere else in the body. If you take an area that's tight and you try and stretch it too vigorously, what's going to happen is the stretch receptors are going to say, oh no, you're going to tear us apart. We're going to contract to protect us so we don't get torn apart. Well, stretch receptors are stretch receptors. And same thing's happening within the structure of the lung tissue and within the structure of the chest wall. We condition through gradual change. So if we want to take a deeper breath without signaling the stretch receptors to tell us, uh-oh, you better exhale, you better stop those deep inhales, then we need to condition ourselves. We need to gradually increase our expansion and generate a change and create more pliability and get more used to it, so that our body doesn't think that this is a hysterically strange thing that we're doing. So the tissue changes microscopically over the course of time, and the stretch receptors reset to longer lengths when we've been practicing to put them at their normal physiological rate of change. Now, I know about muscle tissue. Muscle tissue can alter about 20% of its current normal before it hits the stretch receptors. So maybe it's the same within the lung tissue and the rib structure as far as those stretch receptors, that we can change about 20% greater before we hit a stretch receptor. It's not a big change, but once we condition to always going there, the stretch receptors will move, the markers will change, and then we can do more. So the deep breath that you can make right now, and all of these interesting things you're noticing, that I don't have a good control over my exhale, or there's something else, or when I try and inhale, I feel restrictions, or I feel all this sort of stuff that's going on, that's the beginning phases. Once you've been doing it for a while and your body conditions, then physiologically, you're going to be able to accept a deeper breath, more expansion, draw more air in, slow that breathing rate down. That's natural because in part it's a physiological and nervous system conditioning technique that we're doing. So there's a lot of physical that we need to do to create the change, not just to the muscles and tissues, but so that the nervous system does not overreact to what we're doing. So we get better with gentle practice. Now, we've got some higher brain centers. In the hypothalamus area of our brain and in the cortex areas, the upper brain centers, we've got nerve cells that influence our breathing. And you might have experienced this before. If you've hurt yourself, we go, you know, we start to breathe. We feel strong emotions and fear. Rapid breathing occurs, right? That's the hypothalamus saying, we better get some more oxygen in here. We're going to speed up the breathing because it's getting ready to run, right? It's getting, we got to get her out of here. So that's in part. We experience something like pain or strong emotions, even pleasant strong emotions, your heart rate will increase, your breathing will increase, these things will happen because that's just part and parcel, the body's prepping. But this cortex region, that's where we are, that's us consciously controlling. So yes, our higher brain centers are involved in the breathing, so we can override the involuntary with the voluntary, of course, as long as we don't trigger other involuntary effects through other reasons. Now, one other thing that can affect us that is part of the nervous system is when we run into chemical irritants, things in our system, and these are mostly located within the airways, not necessarily within the lung structure itself. So it's the connecting of the nose into the lung is where these nerve centers are located, and they're detecting unwanted substances, and it could be as simple as pollen or dust, but there could be a really noxious, sharp, horrible chemical, or it could be that we're in the water or we swallowed wrong, right? Or there's smoke or something like that. And what happens is that the nerves sense this and they contract the respiratory muscles and cause us to sneeze or cough. You've possibly had that before, that you were going to drink something and then you cough because you swallowed wrong. That was those nerve centers making you cough, all right? So those are some of the things that are affecting our respiratory. Before we, and one last thing before I talk to you about this, the strongest factors would be the amount of carbon dioxide. Second, the next strongest factor would be the amount of oxygen. So those are very, very important. And then one little thing is that you know you've had hiccups before. This is that respiratory center sending extra impulses to the diaphragm muscle, and we get these unwanted contractions, and so we have these hiccups. And usually they're self-limiting most of the time. I mean, there are some situations where people are, you know, have problems, and that's a nervous system kind of issue. But the self-treatment method of holding the breath actually does work, because then if you hold your breath, what happens? Your body goes, hey, there's not enough oxygen, there's too much carbon dioxide, let me take over, and it's probably going to override whatever little thing is going on within the diaphragm muscle. The other methods, such as scaring someone or having a person drink a glass of water while upside down, those are to distract the person from the hiccups, but they also serve as an entertainment for anybody that's witnessing those things. So, you know, we've got that entertainment principle as well. So don't, you know, I'm not saying that those don't work, but they have different reasons that we do. All right, I'm going to unmute everybody for just a moment as well, because you may have some questions about what we just went over as far as these nervous system controls. I remember once with hiccups. This is when I was a kid. It was the idea that we were supposed to go into a headstand or a handstand and drink water. And basically all that meant was that you're going to be pouring water into your nose. I don't know if anybody else had an interesting family like I had. But yeah, they thought that was pretty good. But you know, that fear factor, right? Scaring someone actually would create a change, and holding the breath actually could create a change. But you know, as I say, you know, it's been a while since I've had hiccups. Hopefully I'm not jinxing myself and going to make myself have hiccups. Did any of those stimulate any questions you have about nervous system?
Yeah, I have a question.
Sure.
I heard that if you are hiccuping, you can swallow cold water fast. Does that do anything to re-regulate the nerves that are, you know, sensitive to just that cold and swallowing?
Well, it quite possibly could. I don't know if the cold makes any difference. It might, by swallowing, of course, what we're doing is we're holding our breath. We're basically creating a change in the oxygenation of our system. So it's quite possible that it could. Number one, it's just trying to distract you a little bit too. And so, you know, drinking something cold may very well, you know, give us some distraction. So that's a possibility as well. So it could just be as simple as that. We get a distraction and then it's not as big of a deal. So let me see if I can mute this.
Also, on days when there's a lot of ozone in Houston, mm-hmm. Is there any technique that you suggest?
Filtered air. Yeah, you know, here's the thing. We live in a place where there would be pollutants. And the most important thing for us is to not be exposed to the pollution. And that means that you restrict your time outside. Unfortunately, that's the most important thing, is don't let yourself get into an environment where you would be exposed to noxious chemicals and, you know, ozone as well. So it would be, don't do your exercise outside. Get into a situation where literally you've got filtered air so that you're not going to be exposed to it. All right. And so that's a good question. And here's the other thing, you know, exercising right next to a road, and a lot of pollutants coming that way, that's going to be, you know, irritating the body. You might not cough, but it's going to be getting into the lungs and stuff like that. If you're in a dusty area, you want to, you know, filter. One of the nice things about wearing a mask, can filter out some of those pollutants as well. Let's see. All right. I'm going to mute us all again. And we can follow up, because I want to make sure we have plenty of time to do the action that we came here today for, which is the Sitali breathing. Oh yeah, on page number, what page is this? Page number 5. Okay, that's a great looking face. All right, here we're going to be making a curled tongue, and here's the thing: if you cannot curl your tongue. A few people can't. They don't have the muscle structure that allows the tongue to curl. Don't panic. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It just means that your tongue doesn't curl in like a little straw. And you're okay. You can still do it, because you're going to be drawing air across the tongue. The curling of the tongue, I don't think, adds anything to the air surface. It's just the traditional way to do this. It's purported as a way to cool the body down. The tongue is filled with blood supply. Probably it does help us with being overheated. But I would say to you, if you're having, you know, if you're breathing really, really hard, maybe this Sitali breath is not the time to do it, because it does sort of restrict the breathing a little bit. So I wouldn't have you restrict your breathing while your body is asking you for more oxygen. And also, at the bottom of that page, it says, note, take care when doing this around a dog, since they may take liberties with your outstretched tongue. Yeah. they kind of think that that's, you're doing it just because you want to touch tongues with them or something like that. So be careful about where you do it. And realize too that you're going to look weird and foolish while you're doing this, and there's no getting around that with this technique. It's sort of like the lion pose. You're going to be sticking your tongue out. All right, so this one's best done from, well, I guess you could do it reclined. Don't do it face down, that's probably not good. But from a seated position is what the recommended position is. We're going to keep our head level. We're going to be opening our mouth. We're going to be making a nice little O shape. So you can practice that right now. Oh, a little O shape, O kind of shape with the mouth. We're going to be pushing out our tongue and trying to turn it into a little bit of a tube. So it's best to practice that right now, and I'll be the one who might be the first one. So your tongue goes out, and you try and turn it, you just try and curve it in on itself. You may have never tried to do this. I did it all the time as a kid. So it, that little tube, right? And if you want to see what you look like, a mirror is really great, but you can see yourself on your own video right there. And if you're thinking, oh my God, no, you can turn your video off, right? So you're not going to show anybody your Sitali tongue if you're thinking, no, I won't, I'll do it if nobody sees me. But it's okay, we're all going to be doing it. Once we, you know, when we do it for real, we're going to be stretching the tongue out even further. So we're trying to stick it out a little bit and inhaling, drawing the air through the tube, but also just across the tongue. So if you can't hold the tube, just draw the air across it. So we're going to be inhaling through our mouth. All right, we're going to be inhaling through the mouth across the tongue. And then once we've inhaled, the tongue goes back in the mouth, and we exhale through our nose. All right, so it's a little kind of lizard-like thing that we're going to be doing with our Sitali. It says repeat for 2 to 10 minutes. We're going to do it several times in a row and enjoy our little Sitali breath. Okay, so sit comfortably. All right, just very comfortable. We're going to make an O with our mouth. We're going to form that little tube, and we're going to inhale through it. In the tongue goes, exhale through the nose. And when you're ready, you just do it again. You can breathe into the belly, the side. There's probably going to be a lot to pay attention to with what's happening in the tongue. And just keep trying for it. You can slow it down. You don't have to breathe immediately. Nice little O. Not only does the tongue curve, you try and stick it out a little further. Track it back in again. Breathe through the nose to exhale. Let's try about 4 more of those. You'll go back to your regular breathing, just your regular slow and patient breathing technique. All right. Now, how was that? Kind of weird and strange? Do you feel cooler than you did? Did it cool you down?
Yes.
A little bit?
Even though I can't make the tube, it still cooled me down.
There you go. Anybody else struggle with their tongue tube? Can't make a straw?
I thought it was a genetic trait.
It is a genetic trait.
Okay.
It is. You either have that ability or you don't.
I don't.
You either can do it or you can't. I mean, there might be some training involved if you do it a lot. The other thing is don't stick your tongue so far out that you're straining your tongue muscle. This may or may not, this might become your favorite breathing technique of all time. But certainly, it might have brought us into the moment with ourselves. Did anybody notice a sort of a change in the way their mind was focused?
Yeah.
It's the first breath that I actually wanted to continue doing. That and the zip breath are the first ones I wanted to continue doing, even without instruction.
Excellent. This is part and parcel of why we need to try them all on for SSI. So, you know, what is the thing that gives you a connection? What allows your body, your mind, to truly link in with what's going on? What just invites you to do more? Because we're going to find that some of these things we will never do again. We practice it. We tried it. It is not. We're going to find some of these things we enjoy doing it, and it seemed natural to us. And those would be the ones that you first work with, and they may be the ones that you only do. But by the exploration of these various ones, we truly do advance our knowledge of what breathing is. And remember that there's a lot going on. There's a very physical change that we're making within our muscle structures, where we're making a change within our nervous system. We are creating the stretchability of our lungs. We're creating a mind, a body, being in one place at one time, are developing our tolerance to it. At first, it might have sent just forever to breathe for a couple of minutes, seemed just extremely long. But now we might be saying, you know, that's not so hard to do anymore. I can breathe for a couple of minutes and not feel that it's tasking me too long. So it's conditioning, just like any other conditioning of the body. The mind and body together are becoming conditioned. Now, there's plenty of time for some questions, but also I'm going to be creating, as I said, a change in a little bit of format change. I hope that everybody will come with me. The format change that I anticipate, and I'm still reading through everyone's responses, and so send in if you haven't already, because I want to consider everybody's perspective. But my thought is that we will always do some breathing, a little different each time we come into it. I'm always going to be trying to provide you some information if it seems valid to the course of what's happening physically within the body, maybe associated with some you know, various light nutritional information as well. But then the physicality of this. I'm forgetting right now. We have a physical action that I'm going to show you. The physicality for today is the cat cow pose, but done in a way that stretches and creates change. So I'm just going to move things out of the way for a moment here, and I'm going to come down in the background, and you can join me or not. We're just going to be in a kneeling position. Get these out of the way. And in our kneeling position, we're going to emphasize the movement, the stretch of the structure of our body. We're going to be breathing with the cat-cow. So I'm going to have my hands under my shoulders and my knees under my hips. I'm going to be pulling the chest forward and the hips back to create a stretch of the spine. Now, when I inhale, I'm going to be spreading my back upward, deep inhale into the back of the chest, and then exhaling, sinking down. And then we can do it again, the inhale and the exhale. Relaxing from this would be to sink backward, taking the weight off the wrist. Now, we did that as the inhale and the exhale, emphasizing the back of the chest. Now we're going to reverse inhale and exhale with it, because it works quite well this direction too. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pull forward and pull backward, and I'm going to inhale, belly sinking, And then exhale, back rising and belly pulling in. Still pulled forward and back, inhaling. And then exhaling. And again. And then once more. And then again, coming backward, just relax and rest. So that is another physical technique that we can use. You may find that a lot like the zipper movement that we use today, it sort of encourages breath, but I wanted you to see, because sometimes the rigorousness of traditions say that you must inhale this position, you must exhale that position, but no, you can do it either way. Inhales and exhales work just fine. So it's that movement, and if you're exhaling, pulling the belly in and forcing more of the air out is a great thing to do. And so those actions, it also stretches the rib cage space and allows for us to condition those stretch receptors so that we're getting more breath. So I want to add a few more of exercise principles, very gentle, so that the level of exercise that I would add into these classes would stay on more of a very gentle format. You know, those who may have some difficulty with physical exercise would be perfectly fine. So this isn't going to be the same yoga format that I use in, say, the Saturday morning yoga that I do. It's going to be a very gentle action. And also one of the other topics that I mentioned is meditation. And so breathing and meditation go pretty well together. And there's quite a few different meditative techniques that might be interesting to go through. So I want to create kind of a compilation of several things together. Not too many things so that everything gets, you know, there's too much in 1 hour's coursework, but I think I can get a nice mix for us within all of those things. But you let me know the things that you want me to emphasize more versus things you want to emphasize less. And sometimes class per class, there might be a slight change of emphasis too. So that's where I wanted to go, because I didn't just want this to become stale and the same, because there are a lot of breathing techniques, but there's really not an endless supply of them. And yet mixing and matching things together, adding a few new things in, I think might keep this something very interesting that we can continue to go forward with at this same time on Saturdays, if that is of an interest to you. And so, you know, please do let me know if you've got some needs or some observation or anything else. I would appreciate your feedback. I really do, because I want this to be form fit for you. Let me look on a little bit of our notes to make sure that I got everything with this. Notice how open my sinus areas are. I presume that's in association with the Satali breath, perhaps. I would like to revisit the breathing techniques that you've covered in future classes. Sure, absolutely. I want to go through those again. And so that would be sort of the format. We would focus on breathing techniques that we previously focused on. I would like it to continue the breathing too. Very good. Yes, I'd love to do that as well. Very good. And then one was saying, doesn't seem like is the most important component of of deciding which type of breathing to do. Oh, actually, it is the most important component, because like is the only thing that's going to get you to do it. If you don't, you know, and it's not to say that you won't benefit from doing things you don't like, but let me tell you, it is virtually impossible when you're starting something new to make yourself do the things that you don't like. I mean, you might be that kind of person, but for most people, we get into it. Let's not jump into boiling water, right? Let's jump into something that's pleasant. Find something that we tolerate better, and that definitely works better for us as we're getting used to new things. Is to find something that is not so burdensome, not so onerous, not so unpleasant. Because I'll tell you this: is there any one of these breathing techniques that's more important than the others? It really depends on what you're focused on, but most of them, the benefit is that it's actually changing the structure of our lung and the muscles that control our breathing. It's oxygenating our tissues. It's putting us in a mind-body space that's here and now. It's reducing our stress levels immediately. It's creating changes in the acid-base balance of our body. These are all happening no matter the breathing techniques. We did talk about alternate nostril breathing and how that creates a change in sympathetic versus parasympathetic. So there's certain things, and we'll go back through those. I'll be re-mentioning those again as we re-hit those topics, talking a little bit more about that. And there are, you know, are some other new breathing techniques that they're still in my list of things for us to try out as well. So we're not at the very end of this, but I just wanted you to know, since your handout said, oh, there's seven of these, those were the more traditional pranayamas that I thought were worthy of us going through. And so we're gonna go through some of those. I'm gonna be keep adding in some of those other effects. All right. Excellent, everyone. Thank you for being here with me today. It's
thank you.
As I said, keep in touch with me if you want to contact me via email or text or phone. I do welcome that input from you. So lovely to see you all. Everybody's always invited to any of the other live stream classes, and I do have a lot of stuff. I keep adding to the YouTube, and I know I did not get the audio from last week onto my my website yet. I'm working on it. I'll get that in place as well. So I'll catch
thanks,
up with
Julie.
That.
Thanks, Julie. Awesome.
You're welcome.
Class.
Excellent.
Thank you so much.
Have a great weekend,
nice.
Everyone. Enjoy your Memorial
thanks.
Day, whatever you do with it. All right.
Yeah.
You'll take care.
Bye.
I'll see you again soon.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.